Mormon Expression Voices. My name is Katrine, and I am here today with Joshua Reed. Hi, Josh.
Hi.
Thank you for taking the time to spend with us.
No problem.
I have people ask this all the time, so maybe I'll just ask you, why did you want to share your story on a podcast?
Well, actually, the first time that I heard about Voices was they said that they needed somebody to record over the holidays, and I was going to be in Utah over the holidays. And so I said, I could probably do that, but then I guess the spot was already taken or something, so I couldn't. This is just – I don't really have any particular – I didn't have any particular motives, but now I think I kind of want to let people know what my life has been. I've been working kind of on a memoir of my life, and I think this would be a kind of a good thing to help people understand where I'm coming from. So,
great. I hope it turns out to be a good experience. Maybe I should have asked you this at the end.
Yeah.
Regret it or not.
Okay. Yeah. Oh well.
Okay, so let's begin back when you were little. Where did you grow up, Josh?
I grew up in Utah, Salt Lake City. Midvale. I don't really know where that is, but I grew up in Midvale, and then we moved to South Jordan, and we lived there for a little bit.
Okay, so was your family living in Utah? I imagine you were devout Mormons.
Yes. We were just everything that a Mormon family should be, I guess. My parents have never been particularly strict Mormons. I mean, they want you to do everything that a good Mormon should, but they're not just hardliners, you know? They'll watch some movies that are a little raunchier or whatever.
The Scandal.
Yeah, you know, as long as they're PG-13, it's good, you know?
Oh, okay. So they have their limits, though.
They have their limits, but, you know, just like television shows that have a few naughty bits or whatever, you know?
Okay. And did you come from a big family?
Yes. There are 9 people in my family total.
Oh, yeah.
Big. 7 kids. Yes.
Okay. And where do you fall in your family?
I am the 3rd child. I'm the oldest boy. I have 2 older sisters.
Okay. Did you like growing up in the church?
Yeah. I had a really good time in the church. Even, you know, all the way up until I left, I liked it and I enjoyed it. So yeah, I had lots of friends at church. I loved being a part of it. It gave me a real sense of identity.
Good. Yeah. I think that for a lot of people, it is early on. It's their identity. It was for me.
Yeah.
So when did you make the journey to Colorado from Utah?
We left Utah. We left Utah when I was 12. I would have been about 12. And then from Colorado, we moved to San Diego when I was about 14-ish. So we didn't spend that much time in Colorado.
Okay. And do you know a lot of Mormons in San Diego?
Yeah, the Mormons here are nice. I don't really remember Mormons that much from other places, but the Mormons here are really nice, and they're kind of in this democratic area, so you get some crazies, but for the most part, they're all nice and loving people.
And were there a lot in your school?
Not a lot, but not a small amount. I think there were probably about 30 kids that went to our school that were Mormon.
And you were just – it sounds like you were – were you in high school when you got to San Diego, or were you still in junior high?
I had 1 year of junior high when we moved here.
Okay. And a lot of times faith kind of in high school is when you start to wonder about your faith. Did you have any thoughts or feelings in high school?
Yeah, but actually let's go back to the very beginning because I kind of got ahead of myself. But
yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to start off by saying that that I'm gay, and that was part of the reason that I left the church. And that did actually really manifest itself in high school. So all my life, I suppose, I've known that I was gay. Some people take time to discover that. You know, they say that they didn't know it, and I guess I don't know how that works, because for me, I always knew.
Did you have a word for it, though?
No, I mean, so like when I was a really little kid, no, I didn't. But as soon as I knew what it was, I knew that I was that.
Okay.
I can remember in my earliest years, I don't know exactly when, but I would have been only probably 5 or 6. I can remember we were watching Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And there's one part where the Pharaoh's wife starts like taking off his shirt. And I really liked that scene for some reason. You know, I didn't know what it was, but I liked it. And I went back and watched it a few times.
Okay. How old are you then?
Probably like 5 or 6.
Oh, wow. Really young.
Yeah. I might have been maybe 7. Probably actually more like 7, but yeah.
And did there come a time where you talked to your mom or your dad or anyone about your feelings or that you were gay?
No. So when I came out of the closet, I came out and left the church all in one fell swoop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I realize now that that might not have been the best way to go about it. I think it was really a shock to my parents, not that I was gay, but that I just all of a sudden said, you know, like I wrote them a letter, but I said, you know, I'm gay and I'm leaving the church. And so I think that it was probably more abrasive than I would rather it be.
And they had to play catch up really quick. That's a shock.
Yeah. This is probably typical for a lot of Mormon families, but we don't really talk about anything that is awkward or makes us feel uncomfortable. So that's why it took so long, because I had never really had very serious conversations with my parents about much of anything. That's why I wrote a letter ultimately, because I was just not equipped to talk about things like that. So I wrote them a letter and they, and we just don't talk about it very much, even still after I've come out. And I still live at home, so it can be awkward a little bit sometimes.
How old were you when you wrote the letter?
This is just a couple years ago. I would have been 19.
So this is all still pretty fresh for you.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. But see, actually, I should probably put in a disclaimer that I've come a long way since then. And so a lot of the thoughts and feelings that I had back then, I've kind of forgotten about and forgotten what it really feels like. And I have kind of a present bias towards it, I guess, you know?
Okay. All right. Now, were your parents, did they have any idea about your sexuality?
Yes. Okay. So, when I wrote them a letter, I got a letter back from them. My dad talked to me. We had a conversation about it, but my mom wrote me a letter that I didn't find till a couple days later, because I don't know why, but I only found it a couple days later. But she said, you know, like, I can't say that we're surprised, but we love you, and here's some resources for gay Mormons. So they didn't know, I think, all along. They probably chose not to think about it very much. But actually, when we lived, this is right when we had started moving, when we had moved to San Diego. When we moved to San Diego, my mom called me into her room one day, and she said, it was a night that we were going to go to the temple with the youth group. And she called me into her room, and anytime that, you know, she calls, she asks me if she can talk to me. And anytime she closes the door, you know that it's something serious. And like I said, we don't have serious conversations very often. So I was shaking in my shoes, needless to say. And she said, you know, Josh, Dad has discovered that somebody has been watching porn on his laptop. And I was like, okay. And she said, this is really hard to talk about because it's gay porn. And I knew, of course, that it was me. But I was like, what? Who would do that? You know? And she said, you know, he's pinned it on you, essentially. That was not an ideal to come out, you know, when your mom is confronting you about porn. So I was like, oh my goodness, no, you know. I started crying and I was saying, no, like, I did not do this. I don't know why you would accuse me of this. I didn't do it. And I think she still thought that I had, but I pled and cried enough that she figured that I you know, she'd figured that she could just let it go. And she said, you know, we could make up an excuse why you can't go to the temple tonight. But I was not about to tell her then and there.
Yeah, that would be very uncomfortable.
Yes. It was uncomfortable. And, you know, I realize now that if I had come out then, it might have saved me a lot of pain, I guess, or worry. But I might have also had to go see a bishop and talk about those sorts of things, which would have been terrible. So
yeah,
maybe a good thing.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like your mom was really trying to handle it the correct way. And she, from what you're saying, it doesn't sound like she was attacking you or anything.
No, my parents have always been really loving, really, really caring. They're very intelligent people, and they don't, especially my mom, she reads a lot. And so she knows what's going on, and she's not one to just, she's really understanding, and she comes from a place where she really wants to know what's going on with you.
Good. A year or two later, a few years later, you do come clean that you are gay.
Yes.
But it sounds like she had a little time to think about it before that happened.
Yeah, but, you know, Mormons don't like to, you know, they put things on shelves. They don't like to think about them. So
yeah.
She probably suspected something, but she probably didn't want to think about what might happen if I actually came out. So I don't know how unexpected it was. But I think what was unexpected was that I left the church. You know, she didn't, you know, they didn't sense that anything was wrong. I was still going to church. I was still actively participating. And then just one day I said, you know, I'm not going to do it anymore. And that probably was really hard for them.
Mm-hmm. What did they seem to be more concerned, that you were leaving the church or that you were gay, or was it all just mixed up?
It was definitely that I was leaving the church. They are, like I said, my mom is well-read. My dad is very smart and intelligent. I'm sure he's well-read too, but my mom likes to tell me the things that she's read, so I know about that. But she knows that homosexuality isn't a thing that you can change or that you can fight or whatever. I mean, I guess she thinks you can fight it, but something that you can't change. I don't know if she told me this or if I heard, I don't really remember, but I know that she is okay with me being gay, but she does not. My parents don't really like the fact that I've left the church.
So why didn't you try to stick it out and stay in the church?
Okay, well, so this is really an issue that I've thought about for a long time, because if you tell Mormons that they're, you know, homophobic or that they're anti-gay or something, that they'll be like, no, we love gay people, we do, you know. And the Mormon Church is probably one of the more progressive churches on this issue. You know, they don't think that homosexuality is inherently a sin. And so I don't remember where I was going with this.
Why didn't you stay in church after?
Oh, okay.
So
I think what it was ultimately I said, I want to feel real love. I dated a girl in high school for a little bit, and we were really good friends, but it was never, I never felt like Twitter pated, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to feel that. I wanted to feel the excitement of being really in love with somebody. And I knew that I couldn't find that in the church. I also had this problem that I would always be alone, I guess, you know, and that's a really scary prospect. When the entire plan for Earth is to get married and have children, it kind of is, that's a little depressing.
Yeah. There's no place for you there.
Yeah, exactly. Someone once told me, you know, like there's no plan of happiness for gay people in the church. You know, it's just miserable. And actually another thing that somebody once I heard, they said, you know that you succeeded in the church when you're ultimately miserable. You know, so it's not so much that they're aggressive towards gay people or that they hate gay people, but it's just a lonely place to be. I went to Sunstone this just a few weeks ago, and one of the speakers, they were talking about Mormonism and violence, and one of the speakers said that she works with a people put into foster care, children put into foster care. Okay. And she said that when these children are physically abused, they can usually recover from that. You know, if they find a good home for them, they heal and they move on. But it's the kids that are neglected that really have a hard time adjusting to society. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me then that that is the problem with the church's stance on homosexuality, is that it's neglectful. They ignore it and they say, you know, these aren't feelings that you should have. And they make these feelings that you have seem like they're invalid. And, you know, I would go to, singles ward and they, you know, they'd have lessons on dating and on what to do. And I remember there was one of those lessons and they had a little throw out to me. They said, you know, and if you struggle with same-sex attraction, well, then you should talk to your bishop. And that was it. I mean, they weren't talking directly to me, but, mm-hmm. But it's a really lonely place to be when you feel like your feelings don't matter and you feel like this isn't something that people want to talk about and it's not something that you're allowed to feel. And for me, I chose to leave the church, but for a lot of people, they choose to kill themselves. And I think that's the real problem.
Absolutely. Okay, so you come out to your parents. How do you come out to your siblings?
I came out to them one by one, I guess. And though one of my sisters was on her mission, and I sent her a letter, and it was a long email. And she responded, and she said, "I love you, Josh. Don't give up on the church yet." And that was it. And at that point, I already had given up on the church, so there wasn't much to do there, but she's always been supportive. I mean, to the extent that she can be. All my family members have. And one of my other sisters, I went walking with her because she was here for the holidays, and I went walking with her and I told her that I was gay, and she thought that I was joking for about 5 minutes. but
no, you're not. Yes, I am. No, you're not.
Exactly. And I was like trying to think of a way that I could prove it to her.
show her your dad's laptop. Just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. So, once I had done it a few times, it got easier, but honestly, coming out is always a little bit hard, and it's a little bit not nerve wracking, but you have a little bit of reservation because that's just not somebody that you tell people all the time. You know, you don't walk up to them and say, you know, like, "Hey, like, I like men," you know. I try to remember like why I was so afraid to come out, because I wasn't, I knew that my family would still love me. I knew that I wouldn't get kicked out. I knew that most of my friends supported gay marriage, you know, but I think the reason it's so hard, to come out is that it's like you've been lying, and suddenly you're admitting to people, you're like, you know what, like, I've been lying. And it's a lie that you've kind of been forced to tell, that people have just assumed, you know, but you're kind of coming out and saying, "Hey, like, I've been lying to you this whole time." And I think that's really hard.
Did you have anyone react like that, saying, "Why did you lie to me all this time?" Do you have any bad reactions?
No. I don't think I had any bad reactions, to people that I came out to. I, you know, most people can kind of gauge the water. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I knew that most people would be supportive or at least tolerant. One of my friends, I came out to her, actually it was a couple of my friends at the same time. And I said, "You know, I have something to tell you guys." And she said, "Do you like boys?" And I said, "Yes, that's actually it." And she thought I was joking because she was joking. And so I was like, "No, like I do. I do like boys." And she's like, it was kind of silly, but.
So it sounds like overall you had a fairly positive experience about coming out.
Yeah. You know, I didn't leave the church because I hated it, or because I had a really bad experience there. And I didn't know a lot of the anti-Mormon whatnot that's out there. I just knew that I wanted to live my own life and do what I really felt was right for me. But also, I had had some doubts about the church before I ever came out, or before I had really decided that my identity was as a gay person. I remember one of my friends told me, I was telling them, you know, like, ours is the true church, because that's what us Mormons do. We like to tell everyone, you know, our friends about our church. So I was telling her, you know, like, this is the true church, you know, because I feel it inside. I know. I prayed and I got a confirmation and I just know. And she said, yeah, but people know that their religion is right. You know, there are insane people that believe they're directed by God and they feel it in their heart, you know, and the Greeks really believed that they had these gods in heaven, and they really felt that. And that pretty much was the very first thing that kind of tore down my testimony, was that I realized that feelings aren't enough to base truth on. And I had actually wondered that as a kid. When I was in Sunday school, once I asked my teacher, I said, you know, we know that we're the right church, but the Catholics also think that they're the right church. So how do we know that we're the right church? And my teacher said, you know, you remind me of a 14-year-old boy that went out into a grove and prayed, and I think that's what you need to do. So I did that. And I, you know, honestly, I didn't get an answer. So I guess that was the answer.
But you weren't praying hard enough, Josh.
No, I know. I wasn't doing all the things that I was supposed to. And you know what I was doing on the computer. So, you know, I was not in tune with the Spirit.
Okay. So what is our timeline here? You come out and you leave the church. Is it after that that you start to investigate the validity of the church?
I had gone on a couple ex-Mormon websites before I had left, but most of them were pretty angry and using a lot of cuss words. And at the time I didn't cuss, you know, and so they, you know, I was a little bit turned off by that. So I didn't have that much experience with non-Mormon literature. Well, anti-Mormon literature. And so when I left, like I said, I didn't really have that big of a problem with it. And I thought, you know, a lot of people really find joy in this organization. And so that, you know, that's good. And I think the church does a lot of good for a lot of people. It's just not something that I want. But as I did more research, I found out, you know, all sorts of things about Joseph Smith's polygamy, and, you know, that he ordered the burning of a printing press and all these things. And the more that I came to see the church for what it is and what it's hiding and all those sorts of things. And actually then when I was researching these things, I found, Mormon Expression, not too long ago. And I started listening to it, and Mormons will leave the church and they'll bounce, I guess is the term. They'll go crazy, or they'll get really angry and fight against the church and, you know, try and tear it down. And I didn't do that. But as I listened to Mormon Expression, it gave me words for the things that I had been feeling when I was in the church, you know, like just the loneliness that I felt and the inability to talk. And it made me a little angry. And so I bounced, I guess, not bounced. I got angry for a little while. I have a blog, and it's kind of reflected in that blog. So
yeah,
you see a lot more anger coming out of that.
I think it's natural to have your angry period, and hopefully it doesn't last too long, cause it's not a good place to be, but
yeah, exactly. And I think I've kind of left it. I started this blog, because I thought that people might want to know about my experiences and whatnot. It was not meant for any, it was just meant for to have my opinions and my thoughts out there. And so, yeah, you can kind of see it get a little bit angry. And then, just yesterday I decided not to blog anymore. Just because I think I need to move on, I guess. So that is, I guess, the next stage in my life, is I'm trying to move on. So yeah.
Do you remember what the first thing was that you came across that raised alarm bells that the church wasn't true?
Probably polygamy and the whole blacks and the priesthood thing. When I was going to school, well, I am still going to school, but when I was in high school, people would say, oh, like, you know, I'd say that I was Mormon, and they were like, oh, ha, ha, how many wives do you have? And I was like, ha, ha, very funny. We don't do that anymore. We don't practice that anymore. And I didn't really know that much about polygamy, but when I was in school that I learned that Brigham Young had, like, I don't know how many wives he had, but a lot, you know? And I was like, what? And I was really caught off guard by that. That wasn't so much an issue, but the blacks in the priesthood was, because somebody told me that we didn't let blacks have the priesthood until 78, was it? I don't remember, but and that caught me off guard. I was like, no, that can't be true. You know, that is obviously wrong. That is not something that a true church would do. So I went and I looked up on the internet. I was like, is this true? And the internet told me it was. And, yes. You know, so.
Yeah, I just knew about the blacks in the church, but it was referenced that, you know, people were racist long ago and it was a problem for everyone. But then when I heard it wasn't until 1978, I was like, what?
Yeah. And I was looking for an explanation for it, you know, and I looked all over the internet. I was like, you know, please someone give me a good explanation for this. And one explanation that I got was that, you know, like the church just was in Utah, so they didn't really think about it that much. But it's not an answer that holds up for me. And the fact is that people were racist, you know, in the past. And I have a problem with that, but it's the way things were. And so the church can use that excuse, but to me, that's not something that a perfect church does. A church that's led by God should be ahead of the times, not with them.
Well, not even with them, but behind them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, that was probably the first, thing that I was like, whoa, this is not right.
Back to polygamy a little bit. I sat in Sunday school lessons where we were taught that someday in the afterlife, we would all practice polygamy. As a gay person, what did you think when you heard that? Did you ever hear it?
No, because they don't really talk about that in like little kid Sunday school, you know, or even high school Sunday school. I mean,
they taught in my Sunday school in high school, but I'm in Utah, so maybe that makes a difference.
Maybe I can't remember them ever talking about polygamy very much. I knew that it was something that we had done in the past, but I didn't know that much about it at all. And I didn't know that it was an eternal principle. And the fact is, like, I don't have a problem with polygamy or multiple people getting married. If that's what they want to do and if it's consensual and whatever, like, you can do what you want. I think polygamy has all sorts of problems that result from it, you know, abuse and coercion and all sorts of things like that. But if people really want to do that, then that's fine. What I have a problem with, though, is a church covering it up and covering up Joseph Smith's relationships with 14-year-olds and the methods that he used to get people to marry him and all the beating around the bush of the subject. That's what I have a problem with. Because for me, what I was taught was that the church was unchanging, that we would never bend to the laws of man, you know, and it was clear that we had, you know, it was clear that these were the laws of men that made us change. And so that was probably the second thing that ruined my testimony. But on the subject of polygamy, I had a really great thought. The church really needs to support the gay rights movement, not just because I think it's the right thing to do, but for their own benefit, because if they support the gay rights movement, then it will lead to a more inclusive definition of, you know, who can get married and whatnot. And I think eventually multiple people would be able to get married and the church would once again be able to practice polygamy. And then you have something to do with all the gay males or with all the males that don't get to marry women, you know, because obviously if you have men marrying multiple women, there's like more men that don't have women. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what gay men are for. And the beauty of it is that gay women, they can enter these relationships too, but they'll have, you know, they could find another lesbian and they could both get married to the same man and do their thing. So That is what I would recommend to the church. If the church is listening right now, take my advice. Okay.
See, I'm trying to decide if you're serious or not.
Well, it's mostly a joke, but honestly, if they really wanted to kind of revamp their public image, I think it would be a good way to go.
Can you imagine the surprise? They hold another press conference.
Yes, yes, that would be a surprise. I have a problem with them saying that men can't change God's laws when clearly they changed the laws that the church is practicing. I mean, not the eternal principle, but they stopped the church from practicing polygamy. And also, I mean, in the family proclamation, it says, marriage is between man and a woman, one man and one woman. And I think that's just a flat out lie for the Mormons. They should be saying marriage is between one man and a multiple women, but right now it's, just one man and one woman. And so when they parade around this document saying, gay people can't get married, well, it just falls through for me because they're lying, and I don't know, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it should be between one man and multiple women when we say so.
Exactly. And yes, yes.
Back to the church's stance on homosexuality. Mm-hmm. I actually believe there will come a day when the church does recognize gay rights and recognize gays in church and the priesthood and everything, because if you look back at history with the blacks, the pressure came from outside the church. They were going to lose their tax exempt status. Teams were refusing to play BYU because of their position. Mm-hmm. The outside pressure became so great, they caved. It wasn't a revelation. It was financial. And I think there will come a day when that will happen again.
So I'm kind of torn on this issue, because I think that churches should be allowed to marry who they want to. If people, if the law says that you can't marry somebody unless you're willing to marry gay people too, then they'll just move the ceremony inside the temple, and you'll get married civilly outside the temple, and then get married inside the temple. And I think that they'll face a really huge, they already are. They're facing, a lot of controversy, a lot of bad publicity, I guess. And they're falling behind, clearly. And I thought that too for a long time. I thought that they would eventually change it. But my good old friend John Larson, I don't know if you listen to it, but he has a podcast on why they can't change the stance that they have now. And
I heard that one.
You haven't, or you have?
No, I have not. What did he say in it?
Okay. Well, essentially, he says that it's like a domino effect. If you let gay men have the get married, then it basically invalidates women's roles in the home, right? Because if two men can take care of a child and have the priesthood, then women should, they suddenly don't have anything because their role is motherhood,
In the church's position, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah. So they would have to ordain women then, right? Because you, for two women to be the head of a household, you would have to have the priesthood in that home, right? So they would have to ordain women. And then that puts women on an equal playing field with men. And then the whole temple ceremony kind of falls apart, because it's all based on this kind of women sinning, and like I think they would have a really hard time changing their stance on homosexuality and not just crumbling down. I actually have another idea if they don't decide to go with my embracing the gay agenda idea. I think they need to have another Jesus Christ come forth. I think that because, they had the old laws, they had the law of Moses, and then Jesus Christ came and he said, no, do away with that. I'm the sacrifice, blah, blah, blah. He basically revamped the system. And I think that's what they need if they're going to go through this. Okay. I think they need to choose a person and say, okay, you are going to pretend to be Jesus Christ, and you're going to come out and you're going to say, okay, we've been wrong. You know, these laws have taught us obedience and to withstand public pressure, but this is the new law. And just, I think an entire revamping of the religion under the name of Jesus Christ would do them some good.
They wouldn't even need to have somebody pretend. They just need to find the crazy person that thinks he is Christ.
Yes, exactly.
There's plenty of those.
Yes. I don't think it'd be too hard.
But then what happens when we expect healings and we expect miracles from Christ?
We do what we always have done, you know, say, oh, well, I wasn't healed because I wasn't worthy, or I wasn't healed because God just needed another angel, you know, things like that. You know, we, you can Photoshop anything these days. It would work. Stop trying to crush my dreams.
Are you going to volunteer to be Christ?
I would not have a problem with that. If I got to lay down the law of the land, sure, I would do it. I volunteer.
So. Oh my goodness, that's funny. Okay, call another press conference. Josh Reed is now Christ.
Yes. Yeah, I'm all in favor of this. So make this plan A. If they decide not to go with the polygamy thing, the embracing polygamy and the gays, I think that this should be their plan B. I should totally be a part of the church's PR, their deciding people, you know, like I really should. I could really work wonders for them.
But Josh, can you grow a full beard?
No, I can't. So, but that isn't even a requirement anymore. It used to be. But now Christ would have to be like a missionary, you know, he'd have to come and wearing a, you know, shirt and tie. They wouldn't let Christ in at BYU. So I think I could get away with it.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, any other ideas how you can fix the church?
Oh, I don't know. I know, not really.
It's hard to top Christ, I gotta tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I think this is a really good idea. I don't see why there needs to be another one. They really need to take this idea into consideration, but...
You need to contact the church's PR.
I should.
Oh my goodness.
Can you imagine if I... Hey, so I just have an idea for you guys.
Just get someone to pretend.
Yeah, that would.
Oh, that's cool. Too funny. Okay,
I would probably get excommunicated for that. That would be blasphemy. So,
no, you're allowed to pretend you're Christ. You just can't teach people that.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Oh, too funny. Okay. Since you mentioned excommunication, today is the day that John Dillon was officially excommunicated. Do you have any thoughts, feelings? What are you thinking?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I'm really thankful to be the first one, I guess, you know, to on Mormon Expression to really talk about this. So, you know, because I'm like really great, so so it's probably a good thing. But
you are the first. But this subject has kind of been.
Yeah, I'm sure that people are talking about it. You know, so my thoughts on that are a little bit mixed because I think that churches have their right to do what they want. They can kick people out if they want, but. I think it's really doing them a disservice. I think they're shooting themselves in the foot because John Dillon really hasn't done anything. You know, he is really trying to believe in the church, or he was, and if not believe in it, just stay with it. And he was trying, not necessarily trying to convince people to stay in the church, but giving them a path to do so. When I left the church, I felt like I couldn't talk to anyone. You know, I felt like my doubts and my fears were just going unknown. And I think that if I could have talked about them with somebody at the time, I might have at least delayed the leaving. And I think it's really, really sad that they feel like they need to do that. I think it's sad for the people in the church that are parading this around like it's some kind of really great thing that the church is showing, cracking down on the non-believers and the apostates or something. I just think it's sad that that they're losing somebody who shows more Christ-like love than most people do, than the church itself does.
One thing you hear people say is that if you have doubts, you need to keep them to yourself. You don't want to make mm-hmm. other people question their testimony. Well, mm-hmm. people that say that have never gone through a faith crisis, because yeah. if you're going through that, it's extremely painful. It's isolating. You feel like you're losing your mind. And it's abusive to ask somebody to not seek help.
Yeah, like I said, you know, people feel really lonely. They feel like they're alone. You know, even though I knew that people had left the church, I had heard about apostates, you know, but they were spoken of in a very derogatory manner. But I didn't want to be an apostate, you know. I just wanted answers, and it was really lonely and really hard. So yeah, I think John DeLynn was, if anybody was sent by God, you know, John DeLynn was, maybe he can be the God or Jesus. Maybe he can lead the new era of Mormonism.
That's why he was excommunicated, because they're like, we got to start this whole thing over. Let's burn it down.
Yeah. Christ was reviled of men. You know, the Jews persecuted Christ.
There
so,
go.
So I think this is perfect. Okay. I'm going to call them tomorrow. I'm going to do it.
Who, John DeLynn or the church?
Both.
Okay.
So.
Thank you. Ever thought of this?
Exactly. But yeah, I think they keep excommunicating people, you know, Kate Kelly and John DeLynn, but they're really not going to silence these questions that people are having. People are going to always have these questions. People are all, you know, these questions that are not even new, you know. People have had a problem with Mormonism from its very inception. And the church somehow uses that to dismiss the arguments. They're like, well, people have thought about, you know, people have been arguing against the church forever. So, you know, these arguments aren't, you know, valid or whatever. But mm-hmm. These arguments and these problems and these issues, they're not new to the church. And people are just talking about them more. With the availability of the internet, people are communicating, and people are seeing that other people feel the same way that they do. And I think that is probably the biggest reason that the church shuts down these sorts of things, is because it shows people that they're not alone in their doubt and in their questioning. And when that happens, it's acceptable. And when it becomes acceptable, then you got a problem on your hands. So I think the church is doing what it needs to survive, I guess.
Well, they're pretty good at survival.
Yeah, you know, I they are. And so I think they're doing what they need to survive. I just think it's a really douchey thing to do to survive, you know, for survival of the fittest, I guess. So
you have to watch out for the many and mm-hmm. you know, instead of the needs of the few. Well, I believe that Christ looked out for the minority. He helped the underdog. And it's not fair or right to silence somebody that's the underdog.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. But I think we can all safely say that the church does not exactly exemplify Christ. So,
no, that's why they need to bring Christ back.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
So where are you standing now with your family?
When I left the church and when I told them that I was leaving, we just didn't talk about it after that. We avoided all that subject. We just didn't talk about it. And then I started going to the San Diego Gay Men's Chorus, and that was pretty good. And I enjoyed that. But I avoided talking about that with them. I just called it the chorus. You know, they knew it was the Gay Men's Chorus, but I just called it the chorus because it's just awkward to talk about, I guess. But for the most part, we've been good. It's awkward sometimes, and I think we're starting from scratch, because all my life I had a good relationship with my family, but it was kind of a surface goodness. Not that anything was bad, but we would laugh and we would joke, but nothing ever serious was really talked about. And so there was not really any foundation, I guess. And so I'm trying to build up that foundation with them. Like I said, I started blogging, and there were, I wrote about a lot of, I guess you could say, anti-Mormon things and issues. And so I got some backlash from people. And just a few days ago, my mom said, you know, I've been reading your blog, and I want you to, I think you should reexamine your motives for writing it, because you're hurting the people that you love most, or that love you most. I don't remember, but, and that in part is why I stopped writing, not because I felt like I needed to quote unquote stop hurting people, but because it was just causing too much strain on my relationships with people. For me, blogging was just a way to express what I was feeling. And I thought that people would want to know about me, would want to understand where I was coming from, why I left the church. And some people do. And I got some people, you know, telling me that they really enjoy my blog. And I got some people telling me that some faithful Mormons telling me that I was addressing some of the issues that they had problems with or whatever. But so, yeah, I've stopped blogging, but I am still a non-believer, and I will still talk to anybody that has problems with the church if they want to. And so I don't feel like I'm being silenced. I'm just really trying to focus on healing my relationships right now.
Yeah. No, it's important. Nobody wants their mom hurting or in pain. So
yeah.
I can understand why you're taking a step back.
Yeah. For the most part, though, people have been really supportive of me. You know, they don't necessarily condone what I've chosen, but they say, you know, it's your choice. You can do what you want. And the thing is, I think a lot of Mormons wrestle with these issues, the issue of gay rights and, you know, of women's role in the church. And I think a lot of them really want to understand those that have left, and they really want to reach out to them. And I didn't see that, as I was leaving, you know, I just thought that nobody cared. But I think that people, Mormons that are still going to church, I think that they do care. They just are afraid to show it. I think they're afraid that if they show that they're supportive, that they show that they're concerned, they'll look like they're doubting, or that they're afraid that I might lead them astray, or they're afraid of confronting these issues that they've actually been dealing with, that they've kind of set aside on the shelf. I think that the members of the church are really looking to do good and really looking to understand why people leave and really trying to be better in that regard. Mm-hmm. But I think they're just too scared or they're just not ready to do so.
I do believe they're afraid, and the church assists in that fear, because just for example, today they excommunicated a gay supporter.
Yes. Yeah. They have to paint this picture, I guess, of people that have left as sinners and, you know, they just wanted to sin, and they kind of give you this impression of people that have left as less moral and less dignified, I guess, but because they have a persecution complex that they're trying to feed and that they have to feed off of, I guess. I think they may not reach out to people that are leaving, but if people that are leaving would do a better job, because I didn't, but if people that were leaving would do a better job of reaching out to them in a non-judgmental way, in a way that doesn't make them feel attacked, I think that might help them to reach out to you too. So I don't know. I'm still working through this right now. So
yeah, I get that. And I do also agree. The only thing is, it's really hard to talk to believers about anything you learned or questioned or anything, because their defenses automatically go up, where don't talk about anything that's not positive. Don't question your leaders. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know. And I don't really know what the solution is to that. I think things like what John DeLynn did was really good. He wasn't forcing his beliefs on people. He was just saying, this is what I think, and this is, you know, and I want to help people. He wasn't trying to make make people leave or make people question or anything. And he didn't invite people really to question. He let them come to him, I guess. So I guess just putting your ideas out there and being there for people that start to question, I think is probably the best route that you can go.
I think you have a good point.
I don't know what the problem is. When I, you know, when I started writing my blog, that was a problem. People didn't want to talk about this. And my blog is called A Conversation for One, because that's what I felt it was like. I felt like I was having a conversation with myself, and I wanted people to be a part of that conversation. And I guess some people did, but some other people didn't. So I'm really trying to embrace talking about things that are awkward to talk about and having discussions that most people are reluctant to have. And honestly, I think the church needs to be having these discussions. And you can see that they're kind of starting to have these discussions with the recent publication of the church essays. With the information that's available on the internet, Mormons need to know their stuff, because people are going to find out this information. And if they don't have people to talk to about it, they're going to go to non-Mormon sources to talk about it. So if you're looking to keep people in the church, you got to know your religion better than you think you do. The good things and the bad.
Yeah, I totally agree. But when I hate to say when I was Mormon, because I'm still Mormon. I don't know how to phrase it. When I was active.
A practicing Mormon. That's so weird. That's not Mormon jargon. But
when I was practicing, people would say, oh, you don't know, or what about this? I'd be like, I've been in the church my whole life. I've gone every Sunday. I've graduated somewhere. I know everything, you know? And so it never bothered me that they would say, well, you don't know, because of course I do. I never once would have imagined that my church or my leaders were keeping things from me.
Yeah, I was always told in seminary, you know, like, Mormons know their religion better than any other youths in any other religion. You know, I was told, you guys know your religion, you know it. But the fact is, most Mormon youths don't.
Well,
Most Mormons don't. But like for me, when I was growing up, you know, I did not read the scriptures diligently. They were just way too boring. And actually, the scriptures are a lot more interesting now that I've left the church, now that I can see that they're a, you know, 19th, 18th century document, whatever century it is. You know, now that it has like some historical context, it's a lot more interesting and fascinating to see how Joseph Smith's positions changed and all that. But I didn't know my religion as well as people thought I did. I remember after I left the church and I'd stopped going to the church, the missionaries came over to my house, I guess you could call it to confront me about it, I guess. And this is when I was in Singles Ward, so it was the Singles Ward missionaries. You know, I knew what they were there for, and they knew that I knew what they were there for. And so, you know, I said, hey, like, how are you doing? And they were like, can we come in and talk to you? And I was like, sure. Like, if you want to be brought down into the depths of hell, I will talk to you about it. You know, like, so I said, you know, yeah, sure. Come in. So, and then they said, you know, like, so we're guessing, you know, why we're here. And I said, yeah, I do. And they said, so can we ask like why you stopped coming to church? And I don't remember what I said exactly, but I told them a reason. Like, I didn't believe that one church could be the true church, you know. The senior missionary, he got this really sincere look on his face, and he said, you know, I read the scriptures, you know, and I wanted to know if it was true. So I prayed about it, and I had just the most spiritual feeling inside that it was true. You know, just the most generic speech. And I was like, that's great, but other people do that too. And he, you know, like, and I was like, you know, like, I listed all these examples of people that feel the Spirit and know that God is talking to them or whatever. And he kind of like sat there for a minute, and he just didn't know what to say. He didn't know what to do. And I could see him wrestling with it in his head. Like the thing that he was basing his entire testimony on, I guess I had just destroyed, I guess. And I said, and at one point when we were talking, I said, you know, I don't really necessarily like the Book of Mormon, but I really like the New Testament. I like what Jesus taught. I like reading about his life. And the missionary said, you know, I have to be honest with you, I haven't ever read the New Testament. And the thing is, like, I haven't either. Like, I haven't read all of the New Testament. But he's a missionary who's supposed to be testifying of Christ, and he's never read the New Testament. You know, and I think that if you asked most Mormons, they probably haven't read the Old Testament. They probably haven't read all of the New Testament. But you'd probably find a lot that haven't read the Book of Mormon or the Doctrine and Covenants, you know. So I don't know. Did you read all of those?
No, I didn't. No, I never read the New Testament or the Old Testament.
Yeah, and I think it comes from a like this, oh, I already know all the stories in it, you know. Oh, I learn about those all the time. And so we don't really read it because it's boring. I mean, for one thing, the language is not easy to read. For another thing, it's just the stories aren't that interesting of stories that, you know, they lack development. They lack really characters. They really interesting characters. It's just not a really great story. And we've also heard the stories before. So it just doesn't make for a very good read. And honestly, I think that is a perfectly reasonable reason not to read the scriptures. If it's really boring, I don't think God would put out anything boring. You know, if he's God and he's omnipotent, he knows what's interesting, and he is not going to put out really boring stuff like he did, or like they say he did.
So after crushing the missionary's heart and spirit and soul, you sent him on his way. Have you had any other contact with the church?
No, I haven't. I go back to church occasionally, not really recently though. I mean, I did once or twice, just for like my sister's homecoming. I played the cello in church there, even though I wasn't a believing member at the time. And, I think I went back for another reason once, but it gets really hard to sit through sacrament meeting when you don't believe. I mean, it's hard for anybody, but when you don't believe it, it becomes a lot harder. So
I was one of those weird people that actually liked sacrament meeting. I actually enjoyed the meetings. I had no problem with them. But now if I go back, I go crazy in my head with anything they say. I'm like, you don't know that. That did not happen. That is wrong. And I just understand it.
I liked church all right. I mean, I really enjoyed church. I loved singing. I loved singing in choir. And I think that if anything, listen, all you Mormons that want to get me back, if anything's going to get me back, it'll be choir. Not that anything will, but that is probably the route you should take.
Can you imagine the choir if they let the gays in? It would be amazing.
Yeah, I know. Okay. This is why they need to start taking my advice. I never really felt the Spirit when I prayed or when I read the scriptures or anything. Like I never really felt the Spirit except, I guess, when you could say I was singing. But I also got I felt that tingly feeling that I called the Spirit. I got that at all sorts of other times, you know. So I think church was probably a good thing for me, but I don't know. It was good and bad. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, from what you're saying, it sounds like you're about as in a good a place as you could hope to be.
Well, yes and no. Like I said, I'm still trying to work through a lot of things. I think, like I said, my anger was a little bit delayed. And so I'm still trying to work through that. But yeah, I'm at a really good place. You know, a year ago, 8 months ago, I read this book, and it's called Intuitive Eating, and I would really recommend it for anybody that's looking to just have a better relationship with food, I guess.
I saw that book just the other day at Barnes & Noble.
Oh, you should read it. It's good for anybody. I mean, just anybody. There's a lot of things that go into it. But half of it is about loving yourself and being okay with yourself. And then the other half of it is really anti like dieting or anti controlling, like forcing yourself to eat certain foods. They say, you know, like you should be eating, whatever it is you think will give you the most satisfaction. You should listen to your body and work with your body and try, you know, try different things. Try this kind of food that you thought you didn't like. And if you don't like it, then you don't have to eat it or just things like that. It's a really good book, but I think that it has a lot of applications to everything else. Like the Mormons are very much against they're very much in favor of like suppressing your body, you know, controlling the natural man. But what is better and what is more healthy and what is more exciting is learning about your body, learning about what it is that you really want to do, and learning what it is that actually gives you joy, and learning what causes you pain. And part of intuitive eating is that you can't rely on people to tell you what to eat. You know, you can't listen to people that are saying you should eat this and this and this. You need to listen to yourself. And that's part of what I've been trying to do as I'm coming out of the church, is I'm trying not to listen to people who don't know myself, who don't know what I think and who don't know my experiences. I'm trying not to listen to them telling me what to do. I'm trying to listen to my feelings and what I think is best. And if it doesn't go well, then I can try a different thing. And I think it's a much more healthy way to live. It's a lot less depressing. It's a lot less harmful. It's just a lot more healthy. And you gain a lot of self-respect. You gain a lot of respect for yourself. You get this ability to really decide for yourself, and it's empowering. You can finally decide things for yourself, and you can make choices and explore different options and try things. Because when you're in the church, you feel like I can do this, I can't do that. But when you leave, you can try something, and if it's not for you, then it's not for you. So I think it's a book worth reading for everybody.
Yeah, and as Mormons, we are taught not to try things. We're taught not to change your mind. I think that's mm-hmm. one reason people get so angry when you leave the church, is because you're not allowed to change your mind. You know, you don't change yeah. your mind. You already know. Yeah. It's part of growing up I feel more grown up now than I ever have in my life, because I question things and I decide what's best for me and what's best for my family. When before I would say, well, what does the church think? A lot of the time yeah. I didn't even have to question. I already knew what the church thought, and that's what I did. So I like the intuitive, because I do things a lot of the time intuitively, and sometimes I fall flat on my face and make mistakes, but that's how you grow and become.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And the church really does infantilize its members. It makes them dependent on them. It makes them, you know, they'll say you have free agency, but agency comes at a steep price in the church. You know, you face so much rejection, so much shame, so much guilt, that you're not likely to do those things. And when you leave, you can suddenly take responsibility for your life. And you can say, you know what, I made that mistake, and that's my fault. That's not Satan's fault or anything. That's my fault. And I, you know, that was bad, but I can grow from that, and I can learn from that. And, you know, and the things that you do are not because of God. You know, the good things that you do, they're not because of God. They're not because God had his hand in your life. They're because you did it. They're because you pushed through and you handled the situation well, and you struggled for what you wanted. And that's empowering, and it's very responsible. And I think it's a step up.
Yeah. And when people say it's easier to leave the church than to stay in the church, I hear that a lot. Mm-hmm. It's actually not. It's really scary, and it's really hard, and it's frightening, and it's tough to make your own decisions for the first time in your life. But once you start to do it, you refuse to give it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, on the subject of like how difficult it was to leave the church, I actually – when I was leaving the church, I thought it was hard. But now that I look back on it, I don't think it was as hard as for me as it is for a lot of other people.
That's because you're a young buck.
Yes.
I'm 39.
I know that's true. And the thing is, I had somewhat of an identity outside of the church, because by the time I had, you know, when I was a little kid and even into middle school, I was okay with being a weird kid, because Mormons were peculiar people. You know, they were weird, and I was okay with that. And that was my identity. And then as I got into high school and I did choir, you know, school choir for my time in high school, and I really found a group and other friends, and I found an identity outside of Mormonism. And so I think that really helped me to leave, because I had something else to rely on. I had other people to turn to. And so I realized that for a lot of people, especially people that have spent a long time in the church, that it's hard to leave. But for me, like, I was never that good at following the commandments, and I doubt anybody is, but I was never that good at following the commandments. And I was always kind of skeptical of God. I mean, I just always knew he was there, but like, I was skeptical of like an entire flood taking down the earth. And I was always kind of skeptical of, you know, this or that. So it was not difficult for me to change, to leave. It was kind of difficult for me to change my views on some things, but, and there were definitely some difficult aspects of it, but I think it was a lot easier than it is for some people.
Okay. Do you believe in God?
My answer to that is no. I really wanted to when I left the church. He was just somebody that, I mean, it was just something that I always knew to be true. You know, like I was taught that he was there. Like, it was never really a question in my mind, I guess. Even though, like, I never felt like he ever talked to me or anything, like, I felt like, you know, I it was just fact that he was there. Like, it wasn't anything really worth questioning. But when I left, I really wanted to still believe in God. And I tried out a couple other Christian churches. But I think once you develop the critical skills to leave Mormonism, you develop a lot of the critical skills that help you to leave God. I actually, just really recently, I wrote a poem about how and why I stopped believing in God, and I posted in my blog as my final post. So,
okay, and what was your blog called again?
It's called A Conversation for One.
Okay.
.blogspot.com, and it's one O N E. And I can read you the poem if you'd like, but I don't have
to. No, please go ahead.
I don't really know if this is good, but I wrote it. So, this is called, I guess, For His Own Benefit. And this is based on a phrase that John Larson said on Mormon Expression. And he said, you know, I stopped believing in God for his own benefit. So this is based on that. Okay. So it goes, I stopped believing in God, and people said I was wrong. People wondered why. People begged me not to go. But I stopped believing in God for his own benefit. I stopped believing in God when I realized that he helps people find his car keys and recover from a cold. But he could not help people being compressed into cattle cars, nor the terrified little girls sold into prostitution and slavery. I stopped believing in God because teaching someone a lesson is used as an excuse to commit crimes and atrocities in the name of love. I stopped believing in God because he's an abusive father. I stopped believing in God when I found out that he said men should treat women like cattle, like objects to be counted and had for their own glorification. I stopped believing in God because he's a misogynist. I stopped believing in God when I learned that people are responsible, that the devil doesn't whisper, she's asking for it. When I learned that he blames Satan for rapists and murders rather than admit fault for allowing them to hurt others. I stopped believing in God because he is not just or merciful. I stopped believing in God when I decided that he kept taking the glory for himself, when I decided that he is not responsible for prosthetics, vaccines, chemotherapy, transplants, germ theory, or antibiotics. Scientists and doctors are. I stopped believing in God when he continued to take credit for the extraordinary sacrifices of men and women. I stopped believing in God because he plagiarizes. I stopped believing in God when he said that he had a chosen people, that he favored some above the rest. Even though I was a part of the chosen generation, I never stopped to think about the kids who got picked last. Or I stopped believing in God because he discriminates. I stopped believing in God when I learned that gay girls and transgender boys feel that the only handle on the door of the closet is a trigger of a gun. When I learned that people string themselves up and kick out the chair because their family and their God do not love them or support them in their happiness. I stopped believing in God because he really does hate the gays. I stopped believing in God when he never answered me, when I cried and begged him to make me straight, when he ignored me, when he knew I was suffering and did nothing to help. I stopped believing in God when I realized that he's given up caring. I stopped believing in God because he stopped believing in me. I stopped believing in God for his own benefit, but even more so, I stopped believing in God because if he exists, then he isn't a God I want to know. I stopped believing in God when I discovered that I am self-reliant, when I discovered that I can make my own choices about my mind and body, that I don't need his advice or comfort because I have myself, because this imperfect humankind is more useful and more beautiful than him. I stopped believing in God because I believe in humanity. That was really long. I'm sorry. I didn't realize it was so long. There you have it.
No, it was really good. I'm glad you read it. Very powerful and true. It's sad. I still believe in God, but mm-hmm. I can understand that and I feel that. I don't believe that God has a very big control of our lives or mm-hmm. Has as much influence in our lives that we would like to think. But when mm-hmm. I hear your poem, I mean, I can't argue with it.
Yeah, no, and the thing is, like, I don't want anybody to not believe in God. I really don't. If people find peace and comfort in God, in whatever God they believe in however they choose to believe in Him, that is perfectly fine and understandable. And you know, I'm not right for not believing in God, although I think I am right. But you know, but obviously, like, there's no proof that God is not there, and there's no proof that He is. But so I don't believe in God because of my own experiences and because of just what I felt, but other people feel other things. So maybe God is out there and I just don't know about it. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, I know that when I was in the church, I found a lot of comfort in thinking that even though I was totally alone, sometimes that God was there, even though I never really felt His presence, it was a nice thought.
Yeah.
So, and I even remember, you know, there was this song that we would sing at Easter in choir, and the last line of it went, your Savior takes you in His arms and quiets all your fears. And for me, that was really special because I didn't want to have to wrestle with being gay anymore. And so that was one of those fears that I felt would just go away. But not so much that, but I just felt like it would be so nice to be able to not to worry about anything anymore and just have somebody to hug and hold me. But I realized that you can have that outside of the gospel. There are friends and there's family out there that will hug you and will show you the love that you want and deserve.
Sure. Yeah, and there are some people, this is just according to people's experience and not necessarily the church, but there are people that never felt that love or received that connection with people inside the church. And so it's more healthy for them to look elsewhere.
Yeah, for sure.
I have a hard time with the church making you stay in certain wards and in certain situations when it's an unhealthy environment for you. You should be able to go look. Mm-hmm. For what works for you.
Yeah, definitely. And that is just my philosophy of life, I guess, right now is, you know, do what works for you and do just what you think is right.
Nice. Thanks again for sharing that poem. I really liked it.
Thank you. I like to think I'm a great writer, even though I'll let other people be the judge of whether or not I'm a good writer.
Well, you're a singer, so now you need to sing it too.
Oh, I do not have a tune yet, so you'll have to wait on that. The thing is, I realize that really my story and my experiences are not that unusual. There's a lot of gay people that leave the church, and so maybe some people find that it is a new story, but I don't think it's that original. But I think that the more representation that's out there and the more people that tell their story, the more that, like I said, it gets talked about and the more that people come to see it as a normal thing that you can question and that you can leave and that you can leave and lead a life that's productive and good. And, you know, you're not going to be passed out on the street with hookers or anything. So, yeah.
Well, thank you, Josh. I appreciate it. Well,
thank you for having me.
Anytime.
Over this Skype.
Yeah, and if you want to talk with me on Voices, go ahead and send me an email to voices@mormonexpression.com, and we would love to hear your story. All right, everyone, have a good night. Bye. My time.
Trying